Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's Cortinel. He scores! Cortinel!
Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage? Guaranteed. Offside? For sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Okay, here we go. Click. Record. Yes. It worked again. Rusty. Hi, everybody. Jungle Jim Jerome coming at you with another episode of The Suspendables. With me, of course, and Russ Cortinel, long time NHLer, Russ. I don't know if he keeps getting longer and longer. I started at 12 years. You said, no, it's not that. 15? No. 16? No. Yeah, 17 years, Rusty, in the NHL?
No, you keep screwing it up. 16.
Okay, what's 16? Okay. Anyway, good to have you all aboard. On the show this week, we're going to talk about a number of things. Of course, free agency is going to happen on October 9th. The draft is happening Tuesday night. So by the time you hear this, it will have already happened. So I want to talk to Russ about when he got drafted. The Quebec Major Junior Hockey League is moving towards banning fighting with the huge move that they did this week. I want your opinion on that one, Rusty. And this is going to be the listener appreciation show, Russ.
Okay. Nice.
I'll tell you why. So we have an email. Our email is thesuspendables@yahoo.com. And we've had a ton of them, Russ, over the last several months that I only got the other day.
Of course.
Our producer's been taking them all. He said, do we got emails? He's like, whammo. And he sent me all these emails. And the everyone weighing in is just absolutely beautiful. Love them all. Over the top. Comments, a lot of it about White Claw from some people, but they're fantastic. They love the show, and so this is going to be listener appreciation. So a bunch of shout outs, and we're going to go to their emails with questions that they have for you, Rusty.
Nice.
But how have you been? What's good? You're still in Gosser in Idaho. You were supposed to be home. What's going on?
Yeah, I was supposed to leave about a week ago. I plan to leave, and because I drive, it's kind of, I just decide, you know, the day before, and then I pack up my car and leave and drive back to California. And the weather has been absolutely spectacular for one.
Right.
Lawton, my son, has the golf bug too.
Is he any good?
He is. He's a single digit, and he just started really playing this summer, which pisses me off.
Because you're kind of shit, right? You're not very good.
Yeah, I mean, he's got hand-me-down clubs. I'm looking at his clubs going, oh, my God, I gave you that. I mean, he's using my
hand-me-downs. Get off your wallet, Dad.
Yeah, I'm going to when we get back to California. Right. And we've been busy. People are flipping, freaking planning next summer, and they're buying a future summer home. So I've been busy with clients and prospects, so it's been good. And I think I'll leave probably this weekend coming up, probably head back.
Are you a good closer, Russ, business-wise? For those who don't know, you're there selling real estate for Discovery Properties in a huge development in Idaho. Is it Harris, Idaho? Is that the town?
Yeah, it's Harrison and right across the lake from Coeur d'Alene, downtown Coeur d'Alene, which is just a five-minute boat ride away. So it's just beautiful.
I'm an
okay closer. I love real estate. I've always loved it, buying and selling. And so, I like it. I like both sides to feel really, really good. I never like it to be an uneven match. And so I try hard for both to get, you know, a fair price. So I think I'm good at what I do right now. I'm honest about the numbers, and I educate people on what's going on and then let them decide. I mean, really it's up to the purchaser and then obviously the seller if they take it, but I like it. So
you're good at it.
Yeah. I'm all right.
I'm all right. I've always told you, Russ, I am hands down, I'll go against anyone as an opener. Okay, I will. I'll take anyone on, you, anybody. I don't care how famous they are. And I am the worst closer.
Oh, God.
Okay, I'm the worst closer. But I got a lot of jobs telling guys I was a great opener.
Yeah.
Okay, and I said, listen, when I was selling real estate like I did years ago, I can open better than anyone, but you got to shut me down. Okay, because yeah. I will talk my way out of a deal.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, all the time. And the guy said, well, give me an example of how you're the best closer and why I should hire, or the best opener, why I should hire you. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, this is the way I can explain it. Back in the day when me and all my buddies were single, okay, here's a perfect example of how what a fantastic opener I was, but what a terrible closer. We'd all go to the bar, there'd be a bunch of girls there and stuff, and my buddies would give me the nod like you would. Yeah. Hey, Skipper, get over there, okay? Get over there and do your magic together so we can all talk to those girls. So the short explanation is all my buddies would get laid, but I'd end up going home in a cab by myself.
Yeah, and paying the bar bill.
And paying the tab.
Where'd everybody go? Oh,
so I always got invited out, and I'd be sitting in a cab going, I saw everybody leaving with a girl, and here I am alone.
you know when you go into those bathrooms at the bar, right? That thing that's hanging on the wall. It's called a fucking mirror.
You and I would make a hell of a team, Rusty.
Oh,
I
yeah. could open. Jimmy, you did the 50-yard dash in a 40-yard gym. Just blame your parents.
Anyway.
It's not your fault, pal.
Yeah.
Nice to meet you, Jim. Who are those guys you're with over there? Can you introduce us? Oh, yeah, they're my friends. Come on over.
And they were all, you
boom,
know.
Boom, 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 boom. Where'd everybody go?
Yeah. There's a great expression. I think you were the guy who first hit me with it. There's all sorts of guys that you run with in your circles. And, you got great friends, you know, as I do. And as most people do, got great friends, but we can bust a guy who's not really a genuine friend, right? That they're after you for something else. And mm-hmm. the expression always was the look by. Okay. Right. If the guy's got the look by going, that means, well, he's talking to you in a room and you'd be with all these, you know, celebs, right? Most of the circuit you travel with. So the look by is as he's talking to you, he's looking past you to see, oh, there's Wayne. Oh, yeah. Okay, I got him, right? A look by. And
so, Gary Bettman did that to me.
He looked by. He gave you the look
by? He gave me the look by in the Stanley Cup final in Vancouver. I was in the green room, whatever you wanted to call it, in the old Coliseum.
The look by room.
And, I went up, and there was Neil Smith was there, the GM.
Yeah.
And Gary Bettman, and I went up and introduced myself, and we're talking, having a great conversation. And then Farrah Fawcett walked in.
Yeah.
And Gary Bettman says to me, he goes, Russ, I can talk to you anytime, but I'm blowing you off right now to go over and meet Farrah Fawcett. He freaking flew by me and went over and started chatting up Farrah. It was pretty funny.
Yeah. I've got a similar story.
Oh, really?
Absolutely. So I was living in Ottawa at the time, and I got a phone call from the G-Man 99. Okay, he's in Toronto, and there's a playoff game.
Humble brag.
Humble brag. Yeah. Yeah. People are used to it by now. And he phoned me, said, "You got the Leafs are in the playoffs, man. Jimmy, you got to get down here. Jump in your car and whip down here today, and we'll go to the game." I said, okay.
Yeah.
Never said no to him. And
what was that noise? Oh, I just slammed the door. I'm leaving.
Yeah, exactly. 1 foot. I'm halfway to Kingston. So the drive, the Ottawa-Toronto drive is about a four-hour deal. Anyway, I go blazing down there.
And, back in those days, what was it, a six-beer drive?
Yeah, six beer and a bunch of other shit. Yeah, to get me through it.
Yeah.
So, but I'd get there. And so we're in a box. At Maple Leaf Gardens, I think it's
shocker.
That's how long ago it is. Or, no, it was Air Canada Center, and so we're in the box, and there's a bunch of people there, of course, including Gretz, and He often, what he will do is because people crowd him so much, you know, and when he's at a game, he likes to just watch the game and, mm-hmm. and he'll wave me down. He'll come sit at this chair, sit right beside me because people get so excited. If there's an empty chair, they fill it in there and sometimes they can be beyond a distraction, you know? So anyway, I'm sitting there. I know the rule here. You know, I know the drill, you know, Jimmy, bang, now, move, let's go, right? Or a text, right? Or a text, right? You'll get a text, get down here right now, okay? So anyway, sit down and Bettman finds out that Gretz is there at the game and comes rolling into the box. Mm-hmm. And Gretz says, don't get up. Okay, I'm going, it's the commissioner, for God's sakes, right? And he's not here for me, I'll tell you, right? Anyway, he goes, just stay there. And Gretz loves Bettman, gets along with him. Yeah. Anyway, I'm sitting there. So this is beyond look by from the commissioner. He comes down. He doesn't tap me on the shoulder. Okay. Russ. He grabs me by the wrist. And he goes, he just like
you.
Yeah. He doesn't even say anything to me. I've met him a bunch of times and he does know my name, but we're not friends or anything. And he just grabs my wrist and goes, "Hey, Jim," and yanks me across two chairs and just sits down. So I got the full beyond the look by, but you like the commissioner, Russ?
I do. I probably didn't like him that much when I played, because I went through a couple lockouts and, you know, the fighting and the arguing over the CBA and all that. But after I retired, I got involved in building a monument in my hometown of Victoria, British Columbia, where the Victoria Cougars won the 1925 Stanley Cup.
Wow.
And so I helped my brother Jeff and I, the Patrick family, were involved and we raised money. We donated money and we built this nice monument. So I called up Gary Bettman and I told him the story. And my dad always told us if you don't ask, you won't know what the answer is. And there's two answers, yes or no. So I said, and this is during the Stanley Cup final, I think. I said, "Gary, Jeff and I and Craig Patrick, we're donating our own money and we've raised some money to build this monument for the 1925 Stanley Cup champions, Victoria Cougars." And I said, "The Patrick family, actually, was it the Patrick family? I think they owned the team." I think I'm a little foggy on the history of it, but anyways, I phoned his office. He took my call, or he called me back within 24 hours. I have two stories and I can't remember which one this one is, but anyway, I called him and I asked him, you know, "We're doing this. It'd be really nice to have the Stanley Cup here." And he goes, "Hang on a second. Let me see where it is, because it's traveling because it's in the finals."
Oh,
and
that's a good start when you ask for the Stanley Cup.
So he sent the cup to Victoria for the unveiling of this monument we built.
Shut up.
In Oak Bay. Yeah. Oak Bay. And so and he goes, "You know what? Your brother Jeff never got the Stanley Cup when he won it with the Oilers. They didn't do it back then where they would give it to each player for a day."
Right.
So he said, "Tell Jeff this is his day with the cup." And so I was like, wow, this guy's a stud. I liked him for that. And then I called him on behalf of Notre Dame, where I went to school in Wilcox, Saskatchewan. And I said, "We'd like to come down and meet you in New York to talk about some potential fundraising for the school." And he said, "Yep." And we flew to New York and we met with him in his office with his assistant.
When you say we, and, like the you and Wendell? And
like Neiman? The president of Barry McKenzie, the president of the school, and one or two other guys who were on the board. So the four of us flew to New York and we met with Gary and we showed him how many players had been drafted and played in the NHL from Notre Dame. And he was blown away. He could not believe it. And we had sheets of names just. Oh, and he kept turning the page going, "Are these all players played at Notre Dame?" And he couldn't believe it. So he threw out a bunch of ideas to help us try to raise money for the school. And he just said, look, we cannot give any money, but I will come there and be a guest speaker. I'll do this, I'll do that, you know, and it, nothing came of it, but he took our meeting and was really enthusiastic about what Notre Dame has meant for the NHL, how many players, you know, one of the more famous players, Wendell Clark and mm-hmm. Vince LeCavier and, you know, on and on and on. But anyways, I like him. I do. I didn't like him when I played for obvious reasons, because we were arguing over the CBA and
right.
You know, it didn't work out in my age category, but anyways, he's done a great job for the owners. He's done a great job for the players. They've all made a bunch of money. The league is in great shape other than COVID, and financially the players have, you know, we all know how they're doing. And so it's all good.
Tough gig, eh? Russ, being the commissioner.
Yeah. I just wish that when, instead of him handing out the cup, I wish Wayne would. I think the players and the fans would love it if Wayne was the one going out on the ice, you know, handing out the cup every year.
Sure.
I just, you know, the fans continue to boo Bettman.
It's awful.
It's just like, you know, he now just accepts and kind of embraces it almost.
The Suspendables are engaged on Facebook. Your comments are welcome always.
It's the week of the draft, Rusty.
Yeah.
And
exciting week.
Exciting week. And we've maybe touched on it before, but it's a great week for you to take us through the day you got drafted and that whole thing. By the way, before you do that, the story you told last week on the show, you were rooming with Claude Lemieux.
Yeah.
Not at the trade deadline?
No, it was when they were cutting. They made the last cuts for the... Right. For the 91 Canada Cup team.
Right. So yeah. Anyway, so. Listen to the last show, folks. And you're going to hear a great story about Russ and Claude down to the final cuts and rooming together, and the phone rang. It's great. Talk about the draft, Russ. It means so much to a lot of kids this week. It's I can't imagine trying to handle it emotionally if I was a junior player, college, whoever, and I'm possibly going to get drafted.
Yeah. It's so exciting. And, it happens so fast that year of junior and the rate, you know, you watch your ratings and you have an agent by then and you're talking to your agent. And so the build up to the draft is amazing. And then when I was drafted, I was flown to, Toronto. And I stayed at my agent's house, and there was a few of us. There was Jeff Jackson, who went in the second round. There was Bob Airy, who went to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, remember
in the first
Bob, yeah.
round, and Andrew McBain, who went to Winnipeg, and he was eighth pick. Anyways, I went seventh, and so. The four of us were together, and Dan Hodgson might have been there with us. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Hodgie was with us. And so we're all with Bill Waters. That was our agent. And we stay overnight in Toronto, have a nice dinner at his assistant's house, right. Rick Kern. Rick Kern, who eventually went off on his own with Bobby Orr. And so we stayed at Ricky's house, and then we took the train from Toronto to Montreal, where the draft was
fun.
And, yeah. And you get there 3 days before the first night, our agent gave us his credit card and we went out. It just got absolutely annihilated. The drinking agent.
How about the train ride? That's a 5-hour deal. What happened on the train?
Well, it was nothing happened on the train. I mean, we're all 18 years old, right? So I was still in high school. We're all in high school. And so we're 4 or 5 young 18-year-olds and Ricky Kern, and Bill Waters is already in Montreal working the room with all the teams, you know, sure. trying to get his guys drafted as high as possible and meeting with, you know, the final strokes of the draft is going on right now. So we get there, we go for dinner, we go out because it's now we can, now we're 18 and we can go legally to a bar in Montreal. So it was great showing our ID. I had just turned 18 a few days before. And so we go into a strip club.
Yeah.
I'd never been to a strip club in my life. And you go to Montreal and they're world famous for their strip clubs. I walk in and there's a girl walking around with no top on. And I turn
strip club. Yeah.
I turn to the guys and I go, that girl doesn't have a top. Oh my God. Our boobs are hanging out, like something like that. And they're like, you idiot, we're in a strip bar. Like I had no clue I was getting it. No clue. I have no clue.
No strip joints in Oak Bay, wherever you're
from. No, but I'd never been to a strip club in my life. So anyways, that was my first strip club I ever went to. And then we went out and we ran into Stevie Eiserman, who got drafted in that round. And he was with his family. He's with his sisters and maybe somebody else. And I just remember meeting Stevie Eiserman, and I'd heard about him, but never met him. And he wasn't, you know, he was going to go high in the draft. So there was a lot of publicity about him, but he wasn't Stevie Y, who we all now know. So anyways, got to hang out with him, which was cool. Met a few of the other high draft picks. And then there's the next day, you meet all the guys who are ready to go in the first round. There's media. And it was like 3 or 4 days of this. And then you get interviewed by teams who are interested in you. You can sit down with them. So sat down with a few teams for like a half an hour, and they just want to meet you and talk to you and see what kind of person you are in a quick half hour interview. So
are they asking you questions, Russ? Or just
they're just saying like, hey, you know, tell me about your family. What do you think about, you know, what would it mean to you if we drafted you, come, you know, how would it feel to come to Toronto Washington or Vancouver, all these New York Rangers, all these teams, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, you're so freaking excited. You're just telling them everything, you know, oh, I'd love to play there.
Sure.
The only team I said something negative to is Washington Capitals. And I said, why would you guys want to draft me? You guys got all these great centermen. I'm a centerman. Why would you want to draft me? Like, you know, I didn't know what, I can't believe I said it, but I said it. And all the other teams, I didn't know much about, so I didn't say anything like that, but that was the only negative comment I made. I was just being honest. They didn't draft me, but on the train ride there, myself and Jeff Jackson were sitting together and we got off on the wrong stop, and Rick Kern, we weren't in the same car as they were. And Rick Kern knew he had a bunch of kids from, you know, across Canada, small town kids.
Right.
And he stuck his head out the door to probably make sure that we didn't. And sure enough, we got off and he goes, hey, get back in the car. This isn't our stop. Can you imagine two kids from, you know, one from BC, one from a little town in Ontario, and we're in Quebec. We don't speak a word of French.
Funny.
Yeah, so we got back on the car and then we made it to Montreal, and then the rest happened. And the day of the draft,
let's talk about that.
It's in the morning, and that I don't know if they, I think they did everything in one day back then, not in 2 days. And I got, you know, it was, you know, first I was ready to go 10th or 11th. And freaking Toronto had 7th pick and they picked me, and I couldn't believe it. It was my favorite team, my dad's favorite team. I mean, I was so freaking excited. And you go, so at that time you go to their table and you go up on the, you put the jersey on, they welcome you, shake hands, then you go back to the table and there's a phone on there. And they said, would you like to call your mom? So I called
everybody.
I call my mom in Victoria, 3 hours behind, wake her up and said, mom, I just got drafted to Toronto, 7th pick. She started crying. She's so happy. And then I'm like, that was a free phone call. So I go Notre Dame, where Wilcox, Saskatchewan, where I'd played till I was 16, midget.
Right.
They had, morning varsity, you go to varsity, the dining hall, and they would have morning news, say the Lord's Prayer, sing the national anthem, and then the current events, they'd somebody get up. It's like a half hour deal, right?
Right.
So the whole school's in the varsity hall. And I look at my watch and I'm like, oh, they're there. So I called varsity and they put me on the left. They put the phone, the microphone to the auditorium on the phone. And so I kind of talked to the school saying, hey, I just got drafted seventh overall. And so there was Gord Stellick was the assistant. He was, and anyways, he was kind of tapping his, like, you know, hey, I started getting the feeling like we need that phone. You got to get off the phone. So when you said, did you call everybody? I started calling everybody, not knowing that, you know, they needed that phone to,
right,
if they want to make a trade, if sure, they only had one phone. Russ is calling everybody in the world about the news that he'd been drafted. So that was, it was fun. And then I hung out with the
biggest
guys.
Day of your life, Russ, gotta be.
Oh, for sure. Up until right. That point, that was it, man. I was just, I it was just unbelievable. And then Dan Hodgson was there, and he hadn't been drafted first round, second round, and then finally Toronto picked him, I think, in the third round. I think they got him in the third round, and he was like a prolific scorer in the Western Hockey League, great player. But I felt so bad for him, so I'm sitting beside him, and he's just, and I knew Hodgy from when he played with my brother in Duncan. Mm-hmm. For Cowichan Valley Capitals in junior. And I knew Hodgy through my brother, and I felt horrible. Like, just, he was sitting there like on the last place he wanted to be was there. Once you don't get picked, those players that are there, oh my God, they just, their hearts are just, you know, and their parents are probably with them, and they're just, you're trying, they know the TV cameras are on them. So they're inside, they're melting. On the outside, they're trying to be, you know, positive. But boy, those kids that don't get drafted, when they think they're going to get drafted, it is the worst, the worst. And then when Hodgy got drafted, we just were like pumped, and he got drafted to Toronto. So we were all really excited. And then we went out that night again and had a bunch of fun in Montreal.
Gotta be. Of course you did.
Yeah.
Nothing cures a hangover though, like getting drafted.
You're
hungover like shit. And then
the night before the draft, they asked us to take it easy. So we just had a dinner and didn't do anything crazy. But every other night, man, it was game on. Right. We had our agent's credit card and we went to town. We crushed them.
You bring up a great thing. There's, if you want to have the experience of the raw emotion of a kid being drafted with his parents, and as you pointed out, the worst part of parents being there when the kid doesn't get drafted, you can look on YouTube. There's just some fantastic moments where a kid gets drafted, and they're just beyond control of you know, crying and the parents and all that stuff. And I'd hate to be the other guy. I don't know what I would say to my kid.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's brutal.
Yeah, brutal. But, anyway, great stuff, Rusty. Another thing we want to talk about, fighting in the NHL, it's always a topic. And everyone's discussing all the time whether we got to get rid of it, whether it needs to come back more. There's two sides to this thing. And the Quebec Junior Hockey League, this past week came out and said, we're obviously a huge statement by them, Russ, that they want to get rid of fighting. If you get in a fight, it's 5 minutes like it normally is, and a 10-minute misconduct. So they're really making a move to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. And we want your thoughts on that, Rusty, about fight. You know, forgive us if we have talked about this before, but this is a huge, huge move by a junior hockey league to say, here's what's happening. We want to get rid of it.
Yeah, the only problem with taking fighting out of the game is the cheap shots that, you know, end up happening, and the chicken shit player can get away with murder. And when you're held accountable by, if you're going to the way you act on the ice, if you can't back it up, then you're not going to be a dirty player. And if you're going to be a dirty player, then you have to back it up. And so I worry about just the how dirty players can be and play and knowing they don't have to fight. And if you have to fight, if you have to back up your actions, then the dirty, you know, you're not going to cheap shot anybody if you can't handle yourself. So I don't agree with it. I think there's less and less fighting. I watched the games today and, you know, there's the odd fight, but there's not the fighting that, you know, I don't know what it's like in junior hockey because I don't see a lot of it, but I'm talking about the NHL. There's not a lot of fighting. The game is beautiful. It's great. It's skillful. But when you get guys running around that know they don't have to back up their actions, then I have a problem with that. So I think that the game can be chippy and dirty if you know you don't have to back it up. And that's my issue.
Here's the issue I have, Russ, and lots of people do. And we can use your brother as an example because he got concussed.
Yeah.
And it changed his life. And you've said he's not the same guy he would have been if he didn't suffer from concussions from it. And we had Jeff on, search it up. Mm-hmm. Great interview we did with him. He was talked right from the heart about that and many other things. So they've got this big awareness, Russ, about concussions. Also at the same time, an intent to injure penalty is big. You know, that can lead to many, many suspensions. Isn't that kind of ironic, Russ, that they're trying to raise awareness about concussions and they're trying to clamp down on intent to injure penalties, and yet you're going to allow fighting?
Well, the Jeff's concussions never one came from a fight, and he fought a lot. They all came from dirty hits. When he had his head down, somebody took his head off. Mm-hmm. When he had his back turned, somebody, you know, cross-checked him into the boards. So all his concussions and his problems are not from fighting. So
interesting.
So I think watching the NHL, they've done a really good job of getting rid of the head hit contacts.
Yep.
And it took a while because players grew up knowing they could take your head off, and it took players a long time and a lot of money being penalized. And there's still guys out there that are doing it, but yeah, you talk to any player who's concussed, unless they're a boxer, I don't think too many of them are from fighting. Now, there are players that have been knocked out. We've seen them. But a lot of the players that suffer from concussion problems are from dirty hits.
Good point. Yeah, maybe mm-hmm. so. It's not all bad.
So watch what you wish for. If you take away the fighting and now you've got guys running around with their heads cut off, killing guys, not killing, but hurting players because they know they don't have to fight. And if they run somebody over, they know that if somebody comes over and fights them, they're going to be on the power play. You know, that guy's going to be in the box for 15 minutes. It's, I don't know.
When did you get so smart?
God, it happens every once in a while.
good stuff, Rusty, about the fighting. Would you fight me if I was on the ice? Do you think I'd be able to antagonize you enough?
Oh, my God. Fight you anywhere, anytime.
Okay. time for, like I said at the top of the show, amongst other things, it's listener appreciation. Like I said, we have emails that have been coming in left and right, and our producer gets them in Ottawa, and then I finally asked for them and figured out how to open them up. And we want to give a shout out to a bunch of people who've been listening a long time, including, I love this guy, Russ. He emails me every week saying, where's my shout out?
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it's his handle is Swordfish Trombone. And I said, the main reason I would give you a shout out is I want to find out what that means. Swordfish Trombone. Anyway, longtime guy. Terrence Hooch Parker, Alex Kwiatkowski, Brendan Gary Acorn, Mark Kruger's a big listener. Janice Bramhill sent us all a great email about she worked the concessions at Maple Leaf Gardens.
No way.
Yeah, and talked about having to walk through certain areas to get the stock to walk back to the East Wing, I think, where she worked, and running into Lanny McDonald.
And oh, nice.
She said, Lenny, so I guess she had like two armfuls of chocolate bars that she had to bring back. And didn't realize when Lanny, like anybody else would say, seeing her full arms, trying to peek over the top of this huge load of candy she's bringing, Lanny said, "Hey, do you have a match?" Right? This was the old joke. And anyway, she dropped everything looking for a match. And she has this great experience about Lanny McDonald giving her an autograph. Only after, Russ, that she went and found matchbooks with the Toronto Maple Leaf logo and mailed it to him.
And, nice.
And he sent her a picture, an autographed picture. So anyway, she's a huge fan of the show. So is Alex Paquette. Turkey Nuts is his handle. Jeez. Ryder Hansen. Tim Pruden, Russ. Mm-hmm. That name may mean a little something to you because he's the guy, if people don't know this, your wife Paris is the granddaughter of the great jazz vocalist Sarah Vaughan.
Not the granddaughter.
Or daughter. Sorry, excuse me. Daughter.
Yeah.
Right? Of the great Sarah Vaughan. And this guy sent you an album, an old album of Sarah Vaughan that his mother had in a collection.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. It sits in our living room on our coffee table.
Yeah. So he's a big fan. Aaron Orr.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. He said you got it, Aaron Orr.
It's worth $1,500. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Your thank you letter's on eBay. Yeah. No, you didn't do that.
No.
Let me just read this from J.R. Widers, W-I-D-D-E-R-S. Just a thank you to both of you guys, Jungle and Russ. I've listened to every show since the beginning, and week after week, I look forward to the next. Your podcast is not just funny, but it's touching. Well, playing golf this week, I was speaking to my buddy about issues that were discussed in your podcast, and he said to me, "Hey, Dave, you're speaking like Jungle and Russ are your best buddies." I said, "Well, that's how good this podcast is. Almost like we're sitting at a bar at Gosser, listening to Russ tell some stories while we get to have a shot every once in a while shooting the shit. I've asked before that Russ speak a bit about Mats Naslund. Since he was my player growing up, what kind of person is he? Any funny stories about Mats? Or was he just an ass? I don't know what that means. If Russ doesn't want to speak about him, that's okay too. Just thought I would ask. Thanks again to both of you. And I'll tell you how old this email is. He says, Happy Canada Day. So
nice.
That's from way back.
Now, Mats is a great guy. He was very serious and just wonderful. What a player. Oh, my God. And tough, too. Took a beating and kept on ticking. Yeah. Yeah. Tough Swede. Great guy. Great teammate.
Cool. Thanks to JR and Joy LaRade and Sue Hopgood, who sent an email in, Russ, saying, "Hey, Jimmy, you mentioned you were going on a golf date. How did that turn out?" Well, Russ, that was 3 months ago. Her name's Tracy.
And Cop. We're a
cop, and we're an item.
Russ, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So far.
Nice.
The over she under, smoke? She, well, I got her smoking.
She is now.
She is now. I got her started. Yeah.
We can only hang out together outside because she's breathing in secondhand smoke.
Someone 20%. Else emailed and said, "Rusty's a good gambler. Get him to give us the over-under. You could run a contest on how long Jimmy can last till he screws this up." anyway, it was a golf date. Great way to go on. Great way to go on a date. Anyway. Also,
hit it in the woods and keep going if it's a bad date.
just go right to the car. I've done that before. I think it's Jean Lavoie. Russ said that she loved the way you handled the racial injustice talk that we had of the show. And boy, that's a few months ago now. And so much has happened since then. But you'd have to go back and listen to that show because, of course, Paris is black and your kids are mixed. And it really was a really riveting show from the experiences that your kids had have and you did. Thanks a lot, anyway, to Gene for that. I think it's Ben Urin. His name is spelled U-H-R-Y-N. It's Urine or urine? I don't know. Urine sounds like a bad pronunciation.
Urine.
He's a long haul trucker, Russ, and he wants to know about any experiences you have with Ryan Smith. Ryan Smith had such a long, long storied career in the NHL. They called him Captain Canada.
Yeah, because he never made the playoffs and he played for Team Canada every year.
That's true.
It's true. Every year they didn't make the playoffs and he'd go over and play unbelievable in the World Championships. And I'm not trying to take anything away from him because he's a really good player. But
yeah,
that's why they called him Captain Canada, because he played every year for – oh, I know. It wasn't his fault. Man, what a player. I mean, he scored a ton of goals and he and Doug Weight were great together in Edmonton.
Yeah.
Good combo.
That's true, though. Not only did he play for all those teams, but he had this wicked performance level when he played there.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll tell you a real story. I was at an event, emceeing an event for Kevin Lowe and a local guy here. They raised a huge amount of dough for the children's hospital. It's called the Stollery. And Ryan Smith was there with a newborn. And this will give you a bit of a shiver. So he was up on stage, and I brought him up to the front because he had this infant child, you know, and only Ryan would, because he never said no to being asked. He was known for that around the city. He went, he's like you. Anyone who asks, he's there. And he showed up with this newborn. And I was a little hammered, okay? Mm-hmm. And I said to Ryan, let me hold the baby.
Oh, God.
Okay, we're on the mic. So, Russ, he's about 5 feet from me, and he walks over, hands me the baby, and at the same time, I'm not lying, there was a huge speaker that was on a tripod, okay? And he hit it. He tripped on it, and the thing fell over and collapsed in between me and Ryan, and I had the baby in my hand. It was fucking crazy.
Oh, my God. How scary.
Anyway, Ryan lives here in Edmonton, and he's around a lot. So
the parents in the audience whose baby that was, they must have shit themselves.
It was just, it was his baby.
I'm kidding, you idiot.
I'm losing it.
Some guys bring a Stanley Cup to a fundraiser. He brought a baby.
He brought a baby, yeah.
Let's raise some more money. I'll bring a baby.
Yeah.
He's a good guy.
He's a great guy. And
They love him in Edmonton.
They love him, man. Yeah, he's unbelievable. Holy Puck is another guy I want to give a shout out to. He's Rob, old goalie Templeton is that guy. And DM Dave and Russ Drebin, you know Rusty. We had him on the interview.
Russ. Yeah.
Ron Greshner has, I don't think it's the Ron Greshner because he's the guy who played in New York, wasn't he?
Yeah. Greshner?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Judy Martin is a 75-year-old lady who's, I think, from my hometown. And she sent us an email. She listens every day. She wants to give a shout out to her husband, PJ Martin, who retired after 30 years in the police force.
Nice. Thanks for your service.
Yeah. And she said, you got her going on White Claw. This is a tough 75-year-old. Okay. So you got her hooked on White Claw, Russ.
Perfect.
And when you started promoting White Claw, it was going through the roof. And people a couple months ago were complaining they couldn't get it. They wanted to jump on the White Claw. And she says, I lost my mind and I shoved another woman out of the way to get the last case of White Claw.
Good for her.
Yeah. Anyway, to her, and it looks like T. La Victoire, 919's a guy, Steve Kearns. He wants us to, his dad passed away at 88 years old this week, and he had his dad listen to the show, I believe. Also, great story from Dave Johnny LaRue, because I was there for this when the Oilers won the cup. We used to hang out at this bar called Denny Andrews. You might have even been there when you came through town.
Never.
Never? Oh, yeah. You never went to a bar when you were here?
No. Barry T's.
Barry T's, baby. Yeah. So we were all at Denny Andrews one night, and Dave LaRue reminds us, next thing, the place just erupted, and I specifically remember this. Because I knew it was going to happen. But I always go early, Russ. I got to get to the bar early.
Yeah.
The place erupted and Mess walked in the bar with the Stanley Cup over his head. And it was an absolute shit show. And
yeah,
you know, pre-COVID here, Russ, everyone drinking out of the cup. And Matt J gets a shout out. Matt J wants to know what you think of all the jerseys, Russ, now, the alternate jerseys and all that stuff. What are your thoughts on this? That the jersey used to be kind of sacred, Russ, you know, the Habs jersey. And now everyone's got five or six different ones.
Well, I like the third jersey because, you know, you have the traditional home and away jerseys, and then you have a third jersey and they can play with it.
Right.
I think that's great. When they start changing, you know, really changing the jersey, I'm not a fan. I love the old, and some of those jerseys need to be changed. Like they weren't great, but the old ones, you know, the original six,
right,
they're all still the same. So I don't know. I think the third jersey's it's okay. But I like the traditional jerseys.
Lewis Saul, Rusty, wants to know from you. He writes, "Yo, Jungle, longtime listener. Love the podcast from day one. You guys are absolutely knocking it out of the park, and you're kicking the shit out of Chicklets." Question for the show. How do you guys, Russ, how do you feel, and you played for Dallas in 1999, about the playoff champs and Brett Hull's skate in the crease?
I mean, it was, I don't know. I mean, because I wasn't involved.
Pretty obvious, but Russ.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it was, they had, what did Holly said? They, 45 minutes after the game, they had already drank like two bottles of champagne. There's no way they were going back out on the ice. That when you had your toe in the crease and they called, that was such a stupid rule. Like you could literally be on the corner of the net, have your toe in the crease and the goalie's facing the other way and you don't obstruct at all. And if the puck went in the net, it was disallowed. I mean, it was the stupidest freaking rule.
Right.
I mean, the goalie interference is one thing, but having your skate in the crease and you don't obstruct the goalie, I mean, give me a break.
Right.
That's how I feel.
Okay.
I'll never forget in the playoffs, Mess scores.
Yeah.
And I was playing with Mark and Adam Graves, and I was on the side of the net, and we get back and they're reviewing the goal. And you know, that look, Mess looks at me and goes, "Your foot wasn't in the crease, was it?" I'm like, "No, no, 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 no." And I've got my fingers crossed and my gloves going, "Oh God, I hope it's not in the crease."
Yeah.
Yeah. He's going to kill me right here in Madison Square Gardens.
Or if you know Mess, when he's got his game face, he's going to chop my foot off.
Yeah.
If it got
your foot wasn't in there.
Nope. Let me read. I brought up the name Ron Greschner. I just found this email. Let me read it to you. "Hey guys, great show. I listen to it all the time when I'm working out at the gym. Now that they've closed, I'm a few episodes behind. Just listen to the one where you talk about Len Barry, the urban legend in Victoria, is that he started up Bear Mountain Resort. Mm-hmm. And because he got banned from Royal Colwood Golf Course, where he was a member, and got snapped up one night and went out and cut down some trees on the golf course.
True story.
Okay, here we go. He cut down some trees on the golf course. That pissed him off. What's the story there?
So he was a member of Royal Colwood, lived on the, had a house on the golf course. I think he might still even have it.
Right.
And he couldn't see the golf course because there was these trees between the fence and the fairway. I never went to the house, but story was there was all these trees beyond his fence line. So he went and cut all the trees down and to open up the view. And he found out, you know, he probably knew, but they called him in, the board called him in and said, "You're suspended or kicked out of the club for cutting the trees down." And he went, "Well, fuck you guys. I'm going to build my own golf course." And then he started looking for land and he found Bear Mountain and pulled the money together, bought it and built it. That's true.
So funny.
Yeah.
He goes on. This may be the same story, but it might be somebody who says, so Len needs somewhere else to play. You got to ask Russ, speaking of cutting trees down, there's also a rumor of someone in the uplands in Victoria cutting down trees to improve their view and got fined $10,000 by the city, to which he commented, "No problem. Here's the cash. I just improved my property by $100,000.
Yeah. I think I read that somewhere. I don't know who that was, but I read that somewhere. I don't know who that was, but no doubt you get the view, you get the bigger bucks.
Anyway, what else? We got to say hi to Matt J. You got your thoughts on the jersey. You got your thoughts. Will Engelby. This is our, by the way, this is our listener appreciation night. And a friend of, a cousin of mine, I got to say hi to George Rayner. This is great. He went to school. I don't know this guy, but he emailed us and he went to school with my cousin, Jeff McCarty, whose mother is my dad's sister. And she's still alive, Russ, my auntie Lois, and she's 98 years old.
Jeez.
And this guy emailed me because I haven't talked to her in many, many months. And he emailed me, said, "You need to know this. Your 98-year-old aunt is listening to the Suspendables."
Auntie. Hello, yeah. Auntie.
Yeah. And so thanks a lot, George, for that.
Judy she didn't Martin know you swore so much.
Judy Martin gives us another story about Howie Morenz. When he was in the hospital, I believe he died from complications from a leg injury or something.
Mm-hmm.
But she heard me tell a story about when I had my appendix out that all my buddies, Russ, brought me drinks into the hospital room.
Yeah.
And she talks, she said, that reminded me that all the players, when Howie was in there, they brought in a full bar, liquor and beer, and they had it all set up while he was in the hospital. And she said, "Does Russ have any stories like that?" I said, "Well, I don't know."
We didn't bring any booze to the hospital for anybody, but man, we definitely had beer and wine on many, many trips.
Some of those national teams you played on, Russ, where they usually lay the law down about no booze, you must have to sneak booze in somehow on some of those trips you were on with those teams.
Well, Vancouver Canucks, when I played with them, Tom Rennie took all the booze off the plane. And so we would sneak beer onto the plane and he caught us at the back of the plane drinking and everybody hid their beer, but me, cause I had my back to the front of the plane.
Right.
And they're going, "Coach, coach." And I'm focusing on the cards. I didn't hear them. And he looked at me as he went to the can, he was pissed off. And then he calls me back to the back of the plane. It's like, "Who brought the beer on the plane?" I go, "I'm not going to tell you. You want me to tell on my teammates?"
Yeah, not a squealer.
I'm not freaking telling you who brought them. I want to know. And I go, "Well, you're not going to get it out of me. I'm not going to tell you." So anyways, we called him. He said in the first meeting, "Okay, there's going to be no alcohol on the team flights, on the commercial flights." He goes, "I like to have a jar like anybody once in a while." He wasn't a big drinker.
Right.
And so we nicknamed him TR Jar after that, because he's and he made the announcement at training camp.
Right.
And I've told this story before, but for some people who didn't hear it, we had Esa Tikkanen on our team, who was a big drinker and a great guy. I can't understand a word he says. Tikkanese, he speaks.
Right.
And so the media go flying over to Esa Tikkanen and Whistler at training camp, and they say, and they're like, "Tom Rennie just announced there'll be no more a beer or any alcohol on any commercial or charter flight." And we had our own plane. So we chartered everywhere. We never flew commercial. We always had our own plane.
Beautiful.
So Esa Tikkanen, without missing a beat, looks at the media and says, "I get a doctor note." Oh my God. The media ran back to Tom Rennie and said, Esa Tikkanen just said, we told him that there's no more alcohol on the plane. And he just said, he's going to get a doctor note. And he's such a freaking beauty.
We brought
to answer her question. We did when we had a coach that wouldn't allow beer on the plane, we found a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The great story about Teak, when he came to the country, when he came to Canada, I mean, he didn't speak a lick of English,
no. You
know, and after he was here 15 years, he never spoke a lick of English either. But there's a great story about Esa Tikkanen. So he's in the locker room the first day and all he hears is F-bombs all day.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
All he, you know, F and this and F and that and F and this. And as he called it, puck off, right? Because of his accent. And so he heard this all day, and then they all went to McDonald's and he hadn't said a word. You know, he'd just been listening for 3 hours.
This
locker room talk, right? Which is
right.
you know, triple X rated, man. Okay.
Yeah.
And he gets in line with the boys and he steps up to the cash at the McDonald's to order. And he goes, give me a packing cheeseburger and a packing large fry and a packing milkshake. Our favorite Tick story.
Oh, my God. Tick, he was my roommate.
Anyway, a bunch of other people. Okay. Thanks a lot to Tim Gibbons and Chris A. and Reed Robinson. Sasha, who hung out with all the Oilers up in Grand Prairie and came away with this unbelievable experience of how down-to-earth hockey players are. She just thought they'd be snobby. And of course, anyone who knows hockey players, that's the last thing they are. They're all down to earth. Jamie Pollock, thanks a lot. Rob Seidel, I know Rob. I think he's from town here. Daryl Urquhart, we want to thank all those people for listening. We really appreciate it. And if I had my way, I'd read 3 hours of these great comments that they've given us, Russ. But anyway, Rusty, another show in the books.
Yeah.
That was great. Loved your story about Gary Bettman. We've got, before we leave then, Russ, I'm going to do a quote of the week, Russ.
Okay.
Okay. Here's one of my favorites. Okay. Let me just pull it up here. Because I kind of get tired, Russ, all the adages, especially people on Facebook who they all think they're poets, right? And they all put this stuff out there all day.
Yeah.
However, I like this one. You cannot change the world. Okay, you can change the world by your example, but not by your opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good, Rusty. Good
one. I like that.
You like
that? All right.
And to my buddy Tom Donnelly, he sent a hilarious joke.
Oh God.
She's single, she's shapely, she's beautiful, and she lives right across the street. I can see her place from my kitchen window. I watched as she got home from work this evening. I was surprised when she walked across the street, up my driveway, and knocked on the door. I opened the door. She looked at me and said, I just got home, and I have this strong urge to have a good time, dance, get drunk, and have sex tonight. Are you doing anything? I replied quickly, absolutely not. I'm free. She said, great. Can you watch my dog? Attaboy, Tommy. He sends me a bunch of corny ones, but this was great. Yeah. Anyway, before we go, thanks a lot to everybody. I got to give my nephew a shout out, Russ. My rug is coming in this week.
Your hair or your rug?
Yeah, both. anyway, my buddy Danny, I said we give him a little plug.
Oh, right. Yeah. He got you the free carpet.
I'm paying for things here, man. Yeah, I'm paying for things. In stock flooring. Okay. They had a grand opening here a couple weeks ago. So go check them out. They got a bunch of deals on. Thanks a lot to Danny. And thanks a lot to InStock. They're big fans of the show and they listen to it. And I appreciate what they did. And show your appreciation. Go see them. You can email us, thesuspendables@yahoo.com. I think I finally got that right. Check out our Facebook page, Rusty. The shop now button is there. Boom. Hit it. We got a bunch of merch. Everyone loves it. That's going out. Also, Rusty, next week on the show, Rick Tockett is coming on.
No, great.
Yeah. What are you doing? You're eating right now. You're gapping. What happened?
My son just texted me. What do I want for dinner?
Okay. Okay. Tell him you drank it already. Bring another load.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, we've been trying to get Rick on. And, of course, he's the head coach of the Phoenix Coyotes. They won that play-in round and went tough sled in the second round. But Rick is like one of the most affable, friendly, hilarious guys. You would have played with him, of course, Russ, around the same time. He's one of the same age and one of the greatest guys ever. This guy.
Yeah.
Anyway, tune in next week because we're going to talk to Rick and it's not going to be short. That's for sure. with all the stuff we're doing. So anyway, Rusty, have a good week. Thanks everybody for listening. And we'll be back next week like we are each and every week with another episode of The Suspendables. Whoop, whoop. There we go, Rusty. We made her, buddy.
Get back all right,
to
pal.
Doing what you're doing.
Okay. Talk to you later.
Talk to you later, everybody.
See ya.
The Suspendables is a weekly hockey series with Jim Jerome in Edmonton and Russ Cortinel in L.A. Follow The Suspendables on Facebook and Twitter. Reach us at thesuspendables@yahoo.com. And of course, we appreciate you sharing this podcast with your group of friends.